Sup, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is July 18th, 2018. I'm here today with Bill Fleckenstein, one of my favorite people who is not in the financial media as much as I would like him to be. But Bill is a professional money manager. He's got over 30 years experience. I think it's safe to say he's been a pretty consistent critic of monetary policy as a whole and the Federal Reserve. He writes daily commentary on the market. He's been doing so since the mid-90s, and his website, Fleckenstein Capital, launched in 2003. So if you want to check out Bill's website, it is www.fleckensteincapital.com. How are you, Bill? It's nice to have you back.
I'm fine. Nice to be here with you.
Yeah, this is pretty cool because the first time I had you on was actually my first podcast, and I've done 50 of them since then. And so,
no kidding. Since last spring, you did done 50 of them. Wow.
Well, yeah, no, it was. I think it was February that we talked, right? February or March.
Oh, was it that early? Okay.
Yeah. So I've been, but they've been doing.
Yeah, I've listened to a couple of them actually, and I thought they were quite good.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Did you listen to the Cohodes one recently?
In particular, I did listen to that one for sure.
I had a feeling that may have been one. Yeah, you are you friends with Mark? How long do you guys go back?
Yeah, I've known him for a long, long time. Back in the days when the investment world thought that one and one should make two and not some different kind of number. You know, things were so different back in the 80s and early 90s. But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, I don't. You know, things have just kind of drifted into insanity, and I can't imagine. I can't imagine what it must be like having been around back in the 80s like you're talking about.
You know, I tell you one thing. I talked to a good buddy of mine who I've known, who's been in the business, knows Mark. I mean, a lot of us that have been around that long all kind of know each other, at least the guys on the West Coast. Not, I mean, we don't know everybody, but there's a group of us that know each other. And I talked to this one buddy of mine, hadn't spoken to him for a while. And I said, this was today. And I said, I feel like my first day in the brokerage business in late 1979 at Kidder Peabody, when I look at the market today, I look at it, I don't understand anything, just like I didn't understand anything when I first started.
Well, it has to be. Go ahead.
Because things have gotten so wild, and it's a combination of the behavior modification, which has occurred because of the policies of the central banks and their activist role, the combination of that, peer group pressure in terms of managing money, and then you add in algos, computers, and all this other stuff. I mean, if you told me it gave me a news event, you know, in the past, I could say, well, this will happen, this will probably happen. I could give you a good guess as to what's liable to occur.
Right.
Now, I mean, geez, I mean, I mean, on any given day, I just don't have any idea what's going on. I mean, I have some, I mean, I'm being a little bit, bombastic, because to make a point, but it has gotten to the point, it has become such that there's such lunacy, lunacy is a bit pejorative.
Lunacy is a great word.
Markets have always been irrational, and there are kind of crazy things happen. But the level of it and the willingness to just believe in whatever fantasy is for such a sustained period is nothing we've ever seen before. I don't believe. I obviously wasn't around in the 20s. I doubt it was like this loony. But also then again, we have to recall we've never had central banks pursue QE and negative interest rates and zero and all that. So, you know, when they started to do that 10 years ago, I knew it was going to create a wild landscape where the, you know, past data wouldn't matter. Never did I dream it would go on this long or go this high and all that, but it has. So that's the hand we have to play.
And there's no signs of stopping. They're just going to go until the fucking wheels fall off at some point.
But that doesn't disturb me, because I know how these mad crowd moments go. I was short via puts warrants in Japan in 88, 89. I was involved in the other side of both the last two bubbles, so I've seen firsthand and been involved fighting the madness of crowds on those three different instances. So I understand that it will look like it'll never end the day before it ends.
Right.
So that doesn't disturb me. What does disturb me is it's gone on so long and so many problems that we could have addressed 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago and got our heads around them as a country and put ourselves in a position where they wouldn't be so bad, now have gotten worse. I mean,
right.
You have all these, besides Social Security and the promises, other promises by the federal government to the different citizens in this country, you have all the state, city, county pension plans where most of them are underfunded. You have the same thing in corporate America in a lot of cases. And they've all been allowed to believe that, you know, things are going to work out. Well, I mean, if you had to address some of these things, 10, 15 years ago, and you had to rein in the promises, you'd have a better chance of solving them. There's just one example of how kicking the can winds up creating bigger problems down the road.
Yeah, and I mean, at some point, all of these issues, and just going to even a much larger bird's eye view, let's just talk about the national debt. I mean, at some point, something will have to give, right? Or does it just keep going? I mean, does it just...
I can't say. I mean, what we need to be aware of, though, is, you know, we look at the situation and in just sheer dollar sum, obviously, our debt is staggering. But relative to GDP, Japan's in worse shape.
Right.
So, you know, we've seen what their idea is. Well, we'll just buy all the paper. And, you know, they own, you know, 45% plus or minus of all the JGBs. A significant portion, I forget what the number is, of ETFs and companies in Japan. I figure somewhere down the road, they'll just kind of do a do-over on all the debt that the BOJ owns and, you know, tear up the paper, tell them off to give them a 200-year piece of paper at, you know, one basis point and call it a day. So now the question is, when they pull that maneuver, are people going to still believe it? I mean, at some point,
right,
you would think that people would say that the currency is worthless,
right?
Or the bond rates would have to back up. When these central banks have demonstrated what they're willing to do, how anyone can worry about deflation and not worry about inflation, since that's the only only policy option they're willing to tolerate. So until the printing press is taken away from them and they're not able to pursue that policy, that's going to be where we go.
Right.
But I mean, we could have had this conversation any time in the last 10 years, and it would have still been an accurate observation. What we don't know is, when does it end? It'll end somewhere on this path while they're trying to, you know, pursue QT. But, you know, when is that going to happen? It could be the day after tomorrow or, you know, 3 months from now.
Yeah. And the interesting thing and the point that you made that, you know, I guess resonated with me most is, as you know, with the currencies all just being confidence games, I mean, you can't really put your finger on whether or not there's going to be that inflection point. I mean, it's all kind of a confidence game, isn't it?
Well,
that's
always been the case. But I think that there used to be a little better choice in some of the currencies. Now you just got the yen, which is a basket case, the euro, ditto, and the dollar. And it's just a question of which central bank is acting in, you know, less drunk.
Right.
And those are your choices. Which of course would lead you to think that the precious metals would be doing very well, and in fact they're not. At least they haven't for a few months, at least. And so that side of the equation is rather frustrating. But the fact of the matter is that everything does hinge on confidence, and at some point these policies will lead them people to question that whether we have when we finally have an accident in the stock market as we pursue QT, then the question is, when the Fed has to come back and restart it or some variation of that theme, will that cause a reexamination, or perhaps will something happen in Japan first? I don't know. But the pure size of the dollars out there and the and um and that the U.S. debt is huge. But as I say, you know, the things the Japanese are doing are, I mean, they're telling you, we want our currency to collapse. We want more inflation and we're willing to pay you. And we're willing to pay you about 2 basis points.
Right.
And people say, oh, okay. Maybe I should buy some Nikkei. It's like, are you kidding me? This is the most insane policy you could possibly imagine. And it's going swimmingly. Thank you very much so far.
So far. Right. And they and when it's talked about, whether it's on the news or whether it's, you know, the central banks holding conferences, they talk about it very matter-of-factly, you know? They just
– Well, because, look, there's a whole generation, if not two, you know, it depends on, you know, 10 or 20 years of being a quote-unquote investment professional where you've never seen anything but this behavior.
Right, right.
Yep. So unless you talk to somebody that has more gray hair than you – or you've read history books, you wouldn't necessarily know that what we're seeing in the last 20 years, 25 years, and certainly in the last decade
is weird,
is
right?
An anomaly in all of financial history. So until people get their lungs ripped out in the financial markets and have to start examining things, they're right. Probably inclined to that. I mean, as I say, we could have had this discussion of what's going on any time in the last 10 years, and it would have been the same description. Little obviously crazier now,
right.
But also we've got some cracks in that the Dow and S&P broke early this year, and while the Nasdaq's made a new high thanks to, you know, 5 or 10 different companies, FANG and a few others, the S&P and Dow haven't, and so we could be putting together, I believe we're carving out a big top, and I think that we'll see some of these companies that stumble, you know, gap hard. That's my present theory. But we'll see if they do. I mean, you know, a lot of people were disturbed that Netflix was down, you know, almost 20% and then closed down 5.
Right.
But, you know, gapping lower
And the Nasdaq made a new high on the same day.
Yeah. So a lot of people got discouraged. And that only emboldens people that think that none of these fundamentals make any difference. Right.
Right.
And so guys that are short at the margin say, oh, God. And then they cover some more. So I understand how this goes. So we just have to be alert to clues that something has changed. I'll never forget. So I started battling Japan sometime in 88. And 88, the market was straight up. And 89, the market was straight up. But I remember vividly in like the third quarter of 89, market started acting a little different. A few things were different. And then 1990, the first 3 days of the year, the market was down, or maybe it was 4. I don't remember. Totally different behavior than anything I'd seen in the prior couple of years. And I thought, wow, maybe something's changed. And in fact, it had. And that was really what you had to wait for in 2000. I wasn't smart enough then to wait that long because that was my first go at tackling a mania, you know, up close and personal. I mean, Japan, I was over here and I had put warrants and it's different. But then with 2008, you know, if you waited for the first payment defaults to explode, that was the end of the housing bubble. So something will happen that will signify that's the end. Now, maybe we've already had that. Maybe the fact the market broke in January and the cryptos broke in December, maybe that was the start of it. But what we'll need another leg with some damage done. Until there's damage done, you're not liable to change anyone's beliefs, probably.
Right. And I think there will be a big difference between the way that the market has kind of stumbled here and there. Like you're talking about at the beginning of this year and, you know, cryptos came off, but, you know, Bitcoin's still trading at $7,300 a coin. I think there'll be a big difference between that and an event that's really a gut punch. And I just don't think, you know, look, maybe we've had it, you know, back when the A-share market crashed a couple of years ago and or it came off, you know, 20% or 30%, whatever the hell it was. And, you know, when Trump won the election, obviously was another kind of event where the futures tumbled. And maybe the event just hasn't been enough of a catalyst yet. In both of those situations, you know, the market was kind of bid back up. You could argue in fashion that, of course, I find to be questionable, but I'm a tinfoil hat wearer kind of in that regard. But you would think that whatever is going to break for that second leg lower, like you're talking about, is really going to have to be a gut punch, right? It's going to have to be something where, like, households talk about it in the morning after it happens.
Yeah, well, you know, not necessarily to start. I mean, you know, it's just going to, I mean, who knows? Things could play out in a myriad of different ways, right? So, but at some point you're going to have to see real selling.
Right.
And, you know, we've got all these artificial structures of people selling volatility and selling puts and targeting VAR. There's all these kind of crazy mechanical strategies which have been self-reinforcing. But once they start to go the other way, it'll get violent quickly. I'm not too worried about that.
But does it matter with the Fed on the on the bid?
No, the Fed's not on the bid.
Just theoretically speaking, I'm not saying obviously.
The Fed, think this through. I know the Fed's going to ride to the rescue, but they've staked out this ground that their policies are so great. They've created this great recovery, so they claim. And unemployment's where they want it. Inflation's almost at the magical number that they picked, even though the statistics are complete bullshit. And so they're going to tighten because in their mind, tightening proves that their policies work. And so while they're raising interest rates, they're also doing QT. They're selling a few bonds and they're selling more each quarter. It's growing, and they intend to do that. So when the market breaks, especially if it goes quickly, it'll take a while for them to say, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't do this. So they will it'll start to get away from them on the downside, but it might not get that far. I don't know how far it's going to trigger them to back off. I know they will back off, which is what makes the short side less interesting to me, because I believe it's just a trade. There's a trade to be had until the Fed comes off and you hear the rumors of emergency Fed meeting, right? And then we talked about this last time, the really important thing to discern will be how do markets respond when the storyline becomes, well, gee, the Fed tried to quit QE and do QT and raise rates and it didn't work. The markets broke. The economy got soggy, blah, blah, blah. Do people say, oh, my God, these policies really don't work? You can never leave ZERP, NERP, QE? Or do they say, oh, good, here they come again. Let's do it again.
Right.
I don't know. They cannot keep doing the same crazy things and have it work indefinitely. It's gotten crazier each time. And now since Greenspan started, making a mess of things, we're almost 30 years into this. So that's quite a long time. So something will come along and disrupt that. At some point, psychology will change. But you ask yourself this. How different would the world look if the central banks couldn't monetize anytime they believed something went wrong, there was weakness in financial markets? Or if people thought, okay, they're going to do that, but we know it's going to create inflation, and the markets demanded much higher rates, right? So the Fed, you might have an incredibly steep yield curve. So a lot of and those things wouldn't necessarily be bullish for stocks. They might be bullish for some stocks and not others. So the important thing to understand is we know what the Fed will do. They're so predictable since they've turned into, since Greenspan started there, and we've had nothing but the same kind of people since. But what we don't know is what iteration will people say, nah, this isn't what we want.
Well,
I can't tell you that.
And you're saying that you think the Fed will come in only after the market breaks to a certain degree. I mean, what do you think the threshold is for them? Because I kind of get this feeling that if the market has a 2% down day one day, Fed is,
That's a little too much hyperbola. I mean, euphemistically, I might say that. But in reality, we'd probably have to get down 15, 20%, something like that. But remember, once it starts to move in big chunks, it can move in really big chunks really fast because of all these artificial structures that essentially mimic portfolio insurance, which was, of course, the culprit behind the 87 stock market crash. So, and then once you get a little panic going and psychology changes, who knows what the outcome would be, but they will come, and again, that's what makes the short side more of a trade, and like you're not missing that much. That's why, again, I explained last time, why I think precious metals offer a much better opportunity, because they are an expression of a lack of confidence.
Right.
I believe no one should have any confidence in these lunatics, but people do. So if people start to say, well, I don't have confidence in them, and then they really lose confidence, you can make so much more, if you believe gold can actually go up, that is.
Right.
and so I just think that the math is sort of skewed away from shorting. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not going to try, and when I see the right signs, I'll do some. But my heart's not in the same way after the 2000 break. I thought, okay, I mean, they were going to, I didn't expect that the Fed hadn't decided that they were going to be like they are now. I mean, Greenspan came with the little cuts and all that, and he didn't understand the equity bubble, and he never understood the real estate bubble. But I didn't fight him anywhere nearly as much because I kind of started to understand their behavior. And that's why I closed my short fund down when they started, you know, the first batch of QE in 09. I knew it was going to be impossible to be short. You know, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to fight them. Now, I didn't know that it was going to last for 10 years and the market would be as crazy as it's gotten to. But I knew what they would do. And now I know what they're going to do. And it makes me, you know, want to be extra careful in trying to capitalize on the downside, because I think I know what they're going to do. And they've skewed the math to me, as I've just described.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that you pointed out before, you know, we're kind of 30 years into this lunacy. And there's really, and I've said this before, too. You know, because there's always those people that are like, well, you know, Bill Flakazide's always, he's always been wrong, or Peter Schiff's always been wrong, or you've always been wrong when you say, you know, that at some point it'll break. And the answer to that, at least the one that I think that makes sense and that I give, is, you know, it's just a question of timing. I mean, it's an unprecedented kind of experiment that we're undertaking here. And like you're saying, the only certainty is that, you know, the goal is inflation, right? The only certainty is the goal is to keep unemployment low. The uncertainty factor comes in as to at what point, you know, either something will give or sentiment will change or psychology will change.
Right.
Where, you know, a currency will blow or a bond market will blow, and we just don't know. It could be 30 years from now. It could be never in our lifetime.
It's not 30 years from now.
You don't think?
They're not going to get all that much farther in QT before they have a train wreck. You know, maybe they can make it another 3-6 months. Maybe. They're not getting it. This is over. We just don't know what day it's over. It's over. They cannot. The QT is ratcheting up, and if these other two, you know, if the ECB and the BOJ, if they start to slow down like the ECB says it will, and the BOJ doesn't, you know, keep it up, or maybe there was not even enough now as the Fed ratchets up QT, it's going to break. It's not debatable, you know. But see, what happens is, the point you make about people say, well, you've been wrong to be, you know, bearish. Well, I mean, I have been wrong to be bearish, but I'm not like I'm trying to fight them. But the point is, through these two bubbles, because of the policies of the Fed, in the last 20 years, you've only really taken about, you know, 2 years worth of pain after the 2000 bubble burst.
Right.
And maybe a year and a quarter in 08.
Yeah, now, like 18 months, right.
The intensity of – so – if you're one of these kind of people that don't understand how the Fed works and how they make up all these reasons why stocks should go up instead of the only reason, which is what the Fed did, the only real reason, then you've only been penalized for these 3 years, 3.5 years out of 18 or 20, you think, that stuff doesn't really matter. And you go with the weight of the evidence, which is if you have that perspective, then you would say anyone that ever says a negative word is dead wrong to ever say it, rather than have them think, well, if there's 100% certainty this thing's going to just collapse, then do I really want to be so arrogant about it? But they don't. People don't think about it this way. And the longer it goes, and the higher it goes, the more people think that that's how anyone who's had any sort of things negative to say gets discredited, and people come to believe that, you know, the tooth fairy, Santa Claus, all these people exist, and the market's going up forever.
Well, when I say 30 years, I'm not talking about, you know, the point at which we'll have our next, recession, or the point at which the market will pull back. I'm talking about the point at which, you know, monetary policy is going to have to change as a whole. I mean, there's, like you said, there's no doubt something will crack and something will give at some point. And there's no doubt that the Fed will respond exactly what you're saying. And I don't have any doubt that QT will end. And I think you're dead on. When I was saying, you know, 30 years or a lifetime, I'm saying how long can they just keep this policy in place? I mean, we're 30 years into it.
It's not possible to know. You cannot know in advance.
Right.
Because it's crowd psychology. And And just like you couldn't know how long it was going to go in this iteration and how high things would go, you can't know that when they come do it again, how are people going to behave? All you're going to be able to do is say, okay, I have to decide, what do I think they're going to do? What does this mean? And then have to make a decision. I mean, I remind you, the BOJ is trying to collapse its currency, create 2% inflation, and they're willing to pay you about 3 basis points to lend them money, and people are doing it. So, I mean, there's a high, high level of insanity right now, and no one seems concerned yet.
Yeah, it's really funny, too, earlier when you mentioned, you know, that you kind of feel like you did when you started as a broker because nothing makes sense to you. I don't know if you listened. I just did a podcast between a bull and a bear on Tesla. And, you know, I think they both did a fantastic job. The bull was a younger gentleman. I think he's in his 20s. The bear is an older gentleman who is, you know, 30 years of experience in the field of law and has been around for a while. And I think he's definitely got the younger gentleman by several decades. And, you know, what he said during his closing arguments is you're too young to have, and he said it in a nice way, he wasn't a dick about it, but he said, you know, you're too young to have lived through any type of recession. And the strange thing is, you know, I guess I never really thought of myself as that old. I'm 35 now. But even just in my lifetime, since I've been following...
You haven't seen anything either.
Right. Yeah. Even just in my lifetime, 17 years, I really haven't. And so it has to be fascinating to understand what the psychology is for people that are in their, you know, people that are in their 20s, Bill, you know.
Well, the people in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s have had little, it's like they've had this 3 bad years out of their whole career. And they have, and now that, I mean, the muscle memory of, what happened in 08 is gone, and everyone thinks, it was just an anomaly. You know, the Fed's totally, changed the storyline. It was, a derivative. I mean, they made up some nonsense. It wasn't their fault. Naturally, they didn't create their real estate bubble. You know, and so people don't have any real fear of losing money. There's no angst. There's no risk management. I mean, you know, so it's all because people have grown up in an era where risk doesn't exist.
Right. That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. So, listen, a couple things you said. Actually, I got a page full of shit here that I was going to ask you, but one of the things that you said dovetails nicely into something that I wanted to ask you anyway. So I want to ask you about the price of gold. Look, I realize there's a number of variables that are being manipulated by central banks, and like they used to say in Whose Line Is It Anyway, you know, the fucking points don't matter. It almost doesn't matter when you can fuck with every variable individually. There's almost no control that keeps things in any type of closed system. It's really ridiculous. And so the price of gold obviously has been down here over the last 6 months. I wanted to ask you about that. I think, and a couple people asked me to ask you about this today. What do you think about the price of gold? You think it's manipulated? You think it'll catch a bid again? It doesn't make sense to me the way that it's acted.
Listen, I've watched precious metals and I've watched enough markets in my career that you get in periods where things just don't make any sense.
Right.
Lots of markets get manipulated from time to time by people who have an agenda. The agenda is normally to make money. So I have a friend of mine who was the largest local in the silver pit for years in the 90s. And he had a big gold business. I met a lot of guys who are on the inside of the gold world, okay, for real. And there were guys who, I'll leave the firms out, big firms, who would organize squeezes and organize, you know, puke fests.
Sure.
All the time. Because the guys are trying to make money.
Sure.
We've seen, you know, when these guys were rigging LIBOR, they weren't rigging LIBOR to help some government. They were rigging it for their own P&L.
Right.
When guys paint the tape at quarter end and month end or at year end for their P&L or they get their carry, they're doing it for money. Now, the central bank basically rigs the financial market because it picks interest rates and it was buying bonds. Okay. And the BOJ is buying equities. But these guys are all proud of that. So they don't have to go in and surreptitiously rig the market higher. If they were buying stocks, they'd tell you, we've done this today for the good of all, you know, and all these people would lap it up, right? So there's this whole people, the community of people that think some nefarious activities taking place, you know, manipulating the market. They do manipulate the market, but they're telling you what they're doing. They're not now. Does that mean they'll never buy SPOOs? No, but if they do, they'll tell us.
You think? You anyway, don't, so you don't think the Fed? You don't think the Fed buys SPOOs now?
No. I don't think that. That's just look. People make this is going to hurt some people's feelings. People
maybe mine.
Make up stories because the market didn't do what they thought that it should,
right.
And therefore somebody stepped in to make it do something different than what it really should have done.
Right.
Now, on the subject of gold, the whole silver manipulation thing was total garbage. You know, Ted Butler and all these people, I mean, I know him. I talked to him 20, 30 years ago. And if you dig into what they said, it was not credible. I knew the head silver trader, JP Morgan. He was a bull. They weren't suppressing the price of silver for anybody. He was bullish. Silver went from 4 to 44. Now, what part was the suppression? Was it supposed to go to 440? And if that thing went 10 times in your face, you don't think somebody that was trying to hold it down at 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 wasn't going to blow up? These GATA people are crazy. They won't listen to the facts. Same with gold. It went from 200 to 1,800. Now, are there bombing runs in gold? Yes. Do guys manipulate it for their P&L? Yes. For all I know, is some small country manipulating it for their P&L? Yeah, maybe. But nobody is holding it down for the Fed or the BOJ or the ECB. These people don't even care. Bank of Canada blew theirs all out. Bank of England did the same. Bernanke can't even spell gold. They don't care. They don't believe in it. They believe in their own decision making. So they don't care about some rock that's been around for a few thousand years. What difference does that make to them? They have models. They have models. And they have spreadsheets. And that's the way the world works. And you people that own these this yellow pet rock, ha, ha, ha. Now, come on. They're really going to manipulate something they have no respect for because they're worried that some lunatics might decide that this means something? It's not credible. People just need to give up. Because, yes, guys push it around. But the problem with gold is there's no fundamentals. You can't – it's not like a company where I can go figure out, oh, you know, I can go do channel checks. I can see what end demand's like. They might have new products, blah, 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 blah. There's none of that. And people forget that there's, you know, 3,000 tons new created each year. But all the gold that's ever existed is still out there. So even though we can look at the ETF or we look at the commitment to traders report and we get ourselves all excited, you have to remember it's a big world and there's more to it than that. Look, I'm guilty of being wrong in the gold market just like lots of guys, right?
Right.
But I'm always aware of the fact that whatever I think I know, I don't really know because I only get to see a little teeny piece of the puzzle.
Right.
And so I'm aware that I can only see a small piece. So I'm always afraid of what might be able to happen rather than say, well, this should have happened. So therefore somebody's manipulated it. And I don't know. I've assumed that these bombing runs where they sell a gazillion contracts, drive the thing down in somebody else's order or something like that. Guys are doing it to make money. They're not trying to take the price of gold down so China can buy it cheaper. All these crazy theories we think. So I know a lot of people are going to get pissed off at me saying this, but I'm so sick and tired of reading, seeing stuff that just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't fit the facts.
No. I appreciate you too. I mean, because there's definitely, you know, I'm a conspiracy theorist also. So it's good. It's good to hear the other side of the argument, especially from somebody who's just as skeptical as I am. And so,
I ran it down. I had a firsthand. I knew people. Not running the silver market, but close to the epicenter of how it moved and traded the books and all that stuff. And I can just tell you, you talk to any of those guys, none of them think they just laugh at you.
Right.
You bring it up, they just roll their eyes. Oh, come on.
But you don't think with the ushering in of, you know, how everything has gone digital hasn't opened the door for different types of manipulation that may not have been present, time when people were open outcry trading these metals.
Well, yeah, but wait, what you're saying is, might it be easier to manipulate the markets to the advantage of your P&L now in the digital age than before? Maybe. but the digital age is not going to make a government decide I need to suppress the price of gold, because if it goes up to $1,400, people will think my policies are no good. Do you really think the idiots of the BOJ give a shit where gold trades?
Right.
I mean, really? Do you think Mario Draghi cares?
I don't know.
Maybe some guys in the Bundesbank do.
I guarantee
the Fed doesn't.
I like to think that. I like to think that, you know, these central bankers at least know that, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's frightening to think
if these central bankers had a modicum of introspection, do you think they could pursue these policies? Do you think they could really have negative interest rates?
Well, I think that to be honest with you, I think that there's probably some of them understand probably fundamentally how fucked up everything that they're doing is, but they do it because they want to keep the status quo.
I totally disagree.
You don't think so?
You don't think when somebody like
Yellen, you know, kind of, there's the changing of the guard at the Fed.
Yellen, she was a clueless college professor.
Wait.
She went to the Fed. She doesn't know anything about anything.
You don't think anywhere, though, that there's central banking officials that when their term is up, they don't breathe a sigh of relief to just say wow, this is incredible. The whole fucking thing didn't go up on my watch. And that they don't, you know, know in some deep down part in their being that these policies are ridiculous.
No. No. Look, I've watched these people in action. I wrote a book about this crap. I read all the FOMC minutes that were released well after the fact. Now, I guess if you really were a real tinfoil hat dude, you'd say, yeah, well, those are the official FOMC minutes, but you don't hear what they say when they turn the mic off, and that's right. What they talk about. I mean, come on. Have you ever looked at what these people say and how they behave? Greenspan was an abject idiot. He was a failed economist. And they stuck him at the Fed. He was a political kiss ass. They stuck him at the Fed. He had no idea what he was doing. He blew the world up twice. And his successors knew even less. He at least had been around Wall Street. These people come out of academia. How people can they're clueless. Look at what goes on in academia today. Look at, you know, the suppression of free speech and all this other crap. These are the people that are now running the Fed. And I mean, they're so clueless. And so you think that these people are that clueless that do this stuff, that's all an acting job. And deep down inside, they're super cynical, market savvy people say, well, we're going to pretend like we're clueless, but behind the scenes, we know exactly what to do. We're going to suppress gold. We're going to set the price of this. We're going to do. I mean, come on. I mean, that's like believing in the Wizard of Oz, the guy behind the curtain. You know, it wasn't a small man.
Oh, this is perfect, because there's a quote here from Ben Bernanke that I wanted to get your reaction to today. So, okay. If you think
Go ahead, fire away. If
it's not going to, you know, give you an aneurysm, are you sitting down?
Yeah.
No, I wanted your honest reaction to this. There was an article in the Financial Times today that basically said that Bernanke is not concerned about the yield curve. And his quote is, historically, the inversion of the yield curve has been a good sign of economic downturns, but this time it may not, because the normal market signals have been distorted by regulatory changes and quantitative easing in other jurisdictions. So he's basically blaming QE and saying that because of QE, we shouldn't give a shit that the yield curve's inverted.
Well, I will say a couple of things. He's actually kind of right that QE has distorted things.
Right.
And so he's kind of actually right that, you know, that the yield curve is kind of inverting a little unusually, in that it's almost kind of inverting from the back end.
Right.
Then the Fed, you know, ratcheting and the bond market betting that there's going to lead to some trouble and what classically happens. But Bernanke, he doesn't understand the economy. You could let's look at the quote from let's call it March, April. I don't know. You'd have to go find it of 2008, March, April 2000.
Oh, there's so many gems from that month.
Where he said subcrime is contained.
Yep.
It had not even metastasized to Alt-A or the rest of the stack. Nothing had happened, and he said it was contained. He didn't understand anything about what had happened. Furthermore, the guy says that the Fed was to blame for depression because they didn't ride to the rescue as he did in 08.
Right.
Well, that's dead wrong. The Fed's to blame for depression because of the bubble it blew in 29 when Strong, who was the head of the Fed then, they decided to give the market a little jolt. They called it a coup to whiskey. That's a direct quote. And it was different back then because we were still quasi on the gold standard, but still they goosed the market. Okay, but Bernanke doesn't understand that, nor did he understand that the Fed created the bubble in 2000 that then dragged the economy down. He and of course didn't understand the one that he was part of that he was going to save the day on. So these guys, they pursue these policies and they light the house on fire and then they put the fire out, right? And they take credit for being the firemen, and they don't realize that they put the house on fire in the first place. They're so unbelievably clueless. They believe their own stuff. It's like they all think they're superheroes.
Do you think there's any chance, in percentages, what chance do you think there is that Bernanke understood that there was a problem, but he was just saying that because he wanted to allay confidence to the market? 2%, 5%?
When?
In 2008.
The chance of him, saying that for confidence and to instill confidence when he knew the truth, the chance of that is precisely 0.0.
Here's the full quote. It's from March 2007. I used it in
March 2007.
Yeah.
Okay. The very first subprime first payment defaults occurred. Okay. It just barely started. And he said what?
Oh, it's so great. I used it in this presentation I did a couple months ago. He says,
go ahead. Give us the quote.
Quote, at this juncture, however, the impact on the broader economy and financial markets of the problems in the subprime market seems likely to be contained. In particular, mortgages to prime borrowers and fixed rate mortgages to all classes of borrowers continue to perform well with low rates of delinquency.
Yeah. So there you go. I rest my case. It was the end. It was over. The very first payment default. Think about that. I didn't even know what they were till they started happening. And I had a friend of mine who was the mortgage broker I'd been talking to, trying to get a pulse of what's going on, calls me and says, first payment defaults are exploding. And I said, first payment defaults? Is that what I think it is? Is that people not making their very first mortgage payment? He said, yeah, they're exploding. I knew then it was over.
Right.
And then it happens and he says, oh, it doesn't mean anything. My point is, they don't understand how the economy works. They don't understand that they blow bubbles. The bubbles are the economy. When the bubble goes, the economy goes.
Right.
When the stock market goes this time, it's going to tank. The economy is going to tank with it.
How about this quote from 2002 from Bernanke also? This is another one that I used in my presentation. I love this one. The U.S. government has a technology
yes.
called a printing yes. press. That allows it to produce as many U.S. dollars as it wishes at no cost.
Exactly. That's why you can never it's talked about their willingness to use it, and that's exactly right. So I agreed with him on that point, and I agree with him on the other point that, you know, the cycle is going to be potentially different in that we're coming off QE, and it's never happened before.
Right.
So the yield curve, I don't think the yield curve per se indicates a recession at this juncture. It may lead to that, but I'm not one of these alarmists that says this yield curve by definition means that. And I think, we got to take the fact that things are so warped because of QA into consideration.
Right, right.
Now we may have if the stock market if the stock market cracks big soon, then we'll wind up in a recession, and then they'll say, well, the yield curve is right. Well, the yield curve is only right in that a bit of stress in the fixed income market led to trouble in the equity market, and then that led to so it's kind of a loose relation at this moment in time, I think.
I'll read you one more quote, and then I'll be done reading your quotes. This is Paul Krugman in 2008.
Oh, Jesus. This, oh, boy, you this is a cast of the epically clueless, greatest hits from the epically clueless.
This is on a slide that I use that's titled "Economists Are Buying Each Other's Bullshit." And the quote is, "I am entirely sympathetic to the efforts of the Fed. This is a very hard time, but you should know that I'm biased. Because before he was promoted, Ben Bernanke was the chairman of the Princeton Economics Department." And Krugman was working at Princeton at the time, which is why he said that. So I thought that was a great example of just the blind are leading the blind.
Well, I mean, you know, this guy Krugman, now talk about a world-class idiot. He rails against the 1% and a huge bifurcation of wealth in this country. And then he cheers the very policies that create the bifurcation.
Right.
There would be no massive the wealth disparity would not be anywhere near as gargantuan and as drastic as it is were it not for the Fed's policies, the very policies that he champions. So the Fed has helped create the massive wealth of the 1%, helped hollow out the middle class, because regardless of what they say about inflation, it's eaten the middle class alive. And in terms of, you know, healthcare costs or education or services or whatever you want to have it, and these people are so clueless about how these policies work and financial history that they cheer the very policies that are creating the things that they hate.
Yeah, it's really frightening. It's really frightening.
Well, I find it more annoying than scary. I mean, look, I mean, yeah, I mean the bubbles that have been blown and the imbalance and the brittle structure of the markets are pretty scary. You know, 2008 kind of scary, right. But I don't think this next time is going to play out just like that. But we'll have to see.
You think if say the markets crack on Trump's watch here at some point during his
they're going to.
Well, you're saying before the next presidential election?
Oh, hell yes. There's no way they're going to get very much. They're not going to get very far along this path of QT. I don't know when it's going to implode, but it's going to. It's not debatable. You can't print all this money and force markets to the moon because you printed the money. Well, if you think printing money doesn't make the markets go up and the market went up by itself, then you would believe that QT won't matter.
Right.
But if you believe that, you're clueless. You don't know how things work. They've printed all the money. They kited the market to the moon. Now they think they're going to take the money back out. They're not going to be able to. It's going to end in a train wreck. I just don't know what day or week it's going to be.
So do you think
we're into the point where, you know, the plane's going to crash. You just don't know which week or month it's going to be. Do you really want to take that flight?
Do I? No, I don't want to. I just bought some.
No, but I mean, I'm just making up an analogy.
I know. Well, that's good for my position I put on today. But anyways, so do you think, look, if it happens on Trump's watch, do you think the Fed blames Trump or do you think Trump blames the Fed? Or do you think neither of those happen or it's just inconsequential?
Trump
it doesn't
will,
matter.
Trump will blame the Fed. The Fed won't be able to come out and blame Trump because they've got this little corporate, you know, they got this their little, you know, little aura they like to project. I don't think they'll blame him. He's liable to be a catalyst on some topic, but the crack is going to come because they're trying to normalize from a policy that the policy created a bubble.
Right.
Now they think they're going to normalize and undo their policy and the bubble's not going to implode.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. That's not going to happen. So, and then, you know, I'm sure he'll blame the Fed because he's not going to blame himself. And it it's really not going to be his, he didn't do it. He didn't blow the bubble. He took credit for it. That's a different thing.
Right. Well, I mean, you don't think that there's a chance that during his term, if it starts to crack, though, they could still come in and, you know, again, lower rates or stop tightening and kind of just hold things steady for a while. I mean, you think there's going to be a serious crack over the next 2 years?
There's going to be a serious crack in the next 6 months.
Oh, wow.
In the past, I always said I never knew what the timing was going to be. And I still don't. But I know that the QT is starting to get serious in terms of size.
Right.
And And it's going to have an impact. I just don't know when, but you're not going to get very far. You're not going to get 2 years into the QT process and then have him out. There's just no way. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, on a timing schedule, that's interesting, because I remember talking to you last time, and as far as I can remember, you didn't want to pin down anything in terms of timing. And even I think at the beginning of this interview, we were talking about it a little bit looser. But you just don't think this QT is going to work at all. You just don't think it's possible.
No, I think it's going to work. I think it's going to work.
Well, it'll work perfectly, in other words.
Yeah.
It'll work too well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I never knew the timing. I mean, we could argue this, we'll never know. But without the money printed by the Bank of Japan, the Swiss National Bank, and the ECB, perhaps just QE would have broken the market. But when they were flooding the world with money, things held together. And I think Trump unleashed some animal spirits that had been, sort of dormant,
right.
and people got excited about his policies after they'd already been trained for 10 years. So he had an impact in terms of, getting people to dream positively on top of all the money that had gone in, but now we're getting deep enough into QE where I don't think we'll make it to year end. Can I be wrong? Wow. I'm not betting on it yet. I'm waiting till I see something, but I don't. Whereas before we got started QT, I would have said, I have no idea. And in the beginning of QT, I wasn't really very sure. But now we're not going to get that far, that much farther, before the thing cracks.
Well, it's always interesting to see, when it's time to kind of, quote unquote, put your money where your mouth is. Like you said, you're not positioned that way yet. But one of the questions actually I submitted, I'll leave you with this, and you can be as detailed or not as detailed as you like. But somebody did send in for me a question to ask you. I guess in general, maybe from a bird's eye view, what type of asset allocation would you look at now, if you had a clean slate and you were at?
Oh, that's impossible to answer because everybody's got a different hand to play. Are you a pension fund? Are you a person? Are you a young person? Are you an older person? I mean, it's like. I mean, what are you really trying to ask me? Because that's an unanswerable question.
Well, I think just given the circumstances, the way that the question was given to me, I think somebody just wants, a general answer. Are you in equities? Are you in bonds? Are you in precious metals?
No,
are you in currencies? Emerging markets?
I think the currencies are all a battle of wits amongst unarmed opponents, so they're not. The precious metals are my answer to them, and they don't go up, so they're not much fun.
Right.
I think the stock market's on borrowed time. I don't want to own it.
Right.
I don't want to own individual stocks. I just think that the accident's too close at hand, and I'm not gonna try to pick up some nickels on the freeway.
Right.
So I own some mining stocks, and I've tried to pick ones where I think they've got some dynamics away from the price of gold, and that's kind of worked, like the Kirkland Lake and Wesdome, and there's been a handful where they've had good drill results. I think Pretium's going to be like that, where they got things that are independent of the gold price. You can maybe make money you're not just stuck on the price of gold. But that's me. I have a certain bias. That doesn't mean everyone should do that. I think,
sure.
I think people in general should have as low of exposure as they can tolerate to the stock market. And in the fixed income world, I don't know why you'd own anything longer than a couple of years. I see no reason to own foreign currencies. I mean, I think the euro could go up against the dollar for a variety of reasons that have to do with just the dollar, but I wouldn't want to own it for more than about 15 minutes. So I don't really see, I don't see any major, I think it's a time to expect that you're going to lose money. And if you thought that financial assets were going to be under pressure, now maybe the bond market's going to rally because the stock market breaks.
Right.
But at some point, then the bond market's going to be in trouble. Is the bond market going to respond well if they come back with QE and they get QT? Or is the bond market going to say, hey, these policies are for sure going to lead to inflation, and we don't want to own any longer dated paper? And then the yield curve gets steep and the Fed loses the long end, and then they really lose the printing press to some degree. So, I mean, it's way too dicey. We're too close to all that happening. Guys have made huge amounts of money, so why try to squeeze the last little bit out of it?
Right.
I think the financial markets are not interesting at all, except just potential shorts.
Yeah, do you have any individual equities that, you know, given the fact that you think the overall picture may crumble at some point, are there any extremely poorly run businesses?
No, because
that you...
I want to – my short-selling strategy is to find situations where I can shoot them in the back. I want a certain set of variables or rules to line up, right? I want the market showing signs of decline. We could make the argument that we're in the early stages of that. I want the Fed not able to come to the rescue, which right now they can't. I'd like to see individual securities respond to bad news. Well, that's the jury's out on that one. And I'd like to have specific catalysts, but I mean, and maybe I could find a couple catalysts, but stocks don't go down. Look, as long as Apple's 190 and Tesla's 320, it tells me that the market's not discriminating at all. Apple's run from 100 and change to 190 as their last two products have been disappointing. Now Trump's, you know, poking the hornet's nest in China. It'd be so easy for them to retaliate through regulatory measures, not even grab any headlines and make Apple's life horrible. Oh, just for a couple. But I mean, so I think Apple and Tesla, if they can levitate, Tesla's a basket case, it doesn't even need discussion.
Well,
they don't go down. And so I need to see stocks start to go down. When they start to go down, I've got plenty of stocks I could want to be involved with. But to stand there and be short them or own puts on them when I may make the point the market's topping, but it doesn't really decline. So how am I going to make money in the short side? I'm not very excited yet. Now you could talk to me in a week and I could change my tune, but for right now, no.
Well, it's an interesting comparison that you pick Apple and Tesla. I mean, one is a very fundamentally sound, you know, robustly cash generating business, and the other one is a $60 billion cream puff. So
Well, the one that's robustly generating has got problems in that there's saturation the world over. They got a big end market in China where the Chinese have lots of decent phones. The regulatory regime could change, just like with the court in – you think the Chinese court gave the unfavorable ruling to Micron, where there's no politics involved. I kind of doubt that. I mean, so there, I guess I do have a little conspiracy streak in me. And Apple's margins are going to come under pressure. They can't sell these phones. The expanding market share, charging whatever you want, that game's kind of over for them. And I don't think the stock's priced for that. I'm not involved. Well, actually, I'm short a teensy amount of Apple just because I think that one of these days something bad may come out of China. And if I'm not there, I'll miss it. If the stock rallies a little bit more, I'll stop out and say I'm wrong. I'm not risking much money. It's not a big position. I don't know that I doubt that I'll take a naked short into the earnings release.
Right.
But between now and then, but I mean, it's a token bet. It doesn't really make any difference.
I mean, you really don't think that Apple as a company has enough gravitas to maintain good relationships with China, regardless of what the U.S. government does, to be honest with you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
The Chinese are playing I assume the Chinese are going to play hardball. Now, I don't know. I'm not that insightful, but my handicapping of it is they feel like, that they can fight back on this. And look, let me ask you this.
Okay.
You're the Chinese government. Do you really give a shit about Apple? They're trying to grow their own technology.
Right.
This whole Belt and Road strategy. They want. So if they ding Apple, that helps their own guys. So what? I mean, so some of their citizens don't have an Apple phone. Who gives a crap? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I guess there's no real case for brand equity there, right?
It's not like the only cell phone on the planet.
Right, right. Yeah, it's an interesting take. It's a really – I mean, what do you think I hate to keep going back to this, but what do you think – do you think Tesla will ever give way? Do you think it's just a matter of time? I mean, what do you think of this whole situation?
I think Tesla's probably worth about zero. it's gonna end up with this at the same price of all the Bitcoin, of all the cryptocurrencies.
Oh yeah, you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I assume someone will buy it out of bank. Look, think about, I don't even pay close attention because I don't want to know too much because I'll be tempted to short Tesla and I don't really want to. I've traded a couple of times very gingerly.
Right.
But look at what we know. Now, look, the guy cuts corners all over the place. So we all read about bolts rusted. You know, that was a story maybe early this year.
Yep.
Well, I happen to know somebody who had worked there back then. They tested the bolts for rust by putting them through, you know, a washing machine to kind of see what was going to happen and all that. They knew that was going to happen. They did it anyway. They do this time. And I found all out this without that much research. And then stuff that people are, this thing is such a joke. I understand it's a great car. Don't get me wrong. And I'm sure some, and, you know, buy the debt price and repackage it. And eventually maybe, you know, it'll be a real company. I don't think that, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be like DeLorean. I mean, it's just, I think the equity holders are not getting anything.
You cut out for a second there at like the worst time possible. But did you say that somebody, so you knew somebody that worked at Tesla and they tested bolts that they knew were going to rust on the vehicles?
No. They didn't know. They were trying to, you know, they tested. Okay. Said, what's going to happen? Okay, well, let's test them. I said, well, how do you test them? He said, hey, put them through a washing machine with salt. You know, you do all this stuff. And then you do that a bunch of times. You see what happens. And he said, well, we knew that they were going to rust, but they decided to produce the cars anyway.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, that's not a novel story. There's tons of things like that.
Right.
And you can already see it, you know, that where they cut corners here and there, and yep. They do all that kind of. So now that problem was several years ago. Now it's reared its head. Well, I mean, what other corners have they cut? So, I mean, I don't think it's a, and now what's going to happen with the running out of tax credits? I mean, right. Look, I'm not even up on the name, and you know, I can see that it's just a disaster in the making from an equity holder standpoint. Not necessarily, you know, if you own the debt, maybe you'd be okay. Maybe you'll own the company if you own the debt and all that down the road. I don't know.
Right.
But anyway, but I'm not fighting the thing because until the market can show me that stuff like this doesn't work, I mean, you know, I'm not going to pick a fight with them.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, listen, man, it's been an awesome hour. I have a whole list of stuff I wanted to ask you, but that I'm not going to be able to get to, unfortunately. I just want to be respectful of your time here. But please, will you come back and will you talk to me again maybe in a couple of months so we can catch up?
Yeah, sure. Especially if QT starts to crack, that'll be at the market. That'll be fun to talk about.
You'll definitely hear from me if that happens. So listen, Bill, I really appreciate you coming on again, man.
Okay.
And we'll catch up again soon. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was the one, the only Bill Fleckenstein. Awesome for him to come back on, especially after he was my inaugural podcast guest. Really appreciate Bill coming on. Again, if you want to check out Bill's website, it's FleckensteinCapital.com. And hopefully we'll be hearing again from him sometime soon. You'll be hearing from me again sometime soon, too. I got a bunch of other stuff lined up for this week. As always, appreciate the listen, guys. And for now, I am out of here. Peace.